Welcome to the Dad Cave with my dad, Stephen Hayes.
And my dad, Mark Chester.
Welcome everyone to another episode. Mark and I were just sat here chatting, and you were stuck in some bad traffic this morning getting here, weren't you, Mark?
I was a little bit delayed, yeah. And straight into the podcast. No time to think.
No.
That's probably the best. No time to think.
Yeah, that's how I operate. So, Mark, I'm going to go into my dad lemma for this week.
Okay.
And I want to see if you've had a similar thing with your kids. So we've started noticing now, as Imogen and Lottie, their personalities are developing, and we can see traits in both of them that mirror our own. But I've noticed that despite my years of experience on Earth and my adult reasoning, sometimes, like, there'll be, I think it was this week or it was the week before, there was a moment where Beck shouted, "Dinner's ready," and Lottie had something. I was like, "Put that down, darling." And she didn't. I tried to take it from her, and she didn't let go. And we're just there, like, jostling over this poxy toy. And I was as frustrated as she was. Neither of us were backing down. And it made me realize some of the more challenging traits to deal with in those moments are my own. And I'm like, oh, it's my fault. Are there any things with either of your kids that you see as similarities, either as when they were little or now?
Yeah, I think it happens all the time and still happens now. We learn a lot from our kids about ourselves, don't we? We start to understand our personalities a bit better by seeing some of our traits in our children. And sometimes it can be a bit of a shock, can't it? My son Billy was away in Stockholm. And just talking to him when he got back, he'd gone with a friend for a weekend and he'd had a great time. But then when he came back, he says, you know, I've realised that actually travelling is quite hard work as well. You know, there's lots of decisions to be made about different stuff. And actually, I really like the UK. And you know, when he was saying that, I was thinking, oh, wow, that is me. I really like the UK and I do find travel quite a lot of hassle. Anyway, I learnt all this about myself from listening to Billy,
yeah.
Which is the important point, isn't it? That our children can sometimes mirror stuff back to us and we can understand more about ourselves by listening to our children and watching our children, how we react to them. So
yeah,
I'm sure you're learning all the time.
Cool. Well, Mark, should we get into our guest for this week? Why didn't you tee him up?
Thanks, Stephen. Yeah, our guest this time is Mark Madovan, and we've wanted Mark to come into the Dad Cave for a long time. His wife, Kathy, has spoken for Care for the Family for many years. He's an inspirational guy, so let's hear from Mark Madovan now. Mark, welcome to the Dad Cave. It's great to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm married to Kathy, been married for 30 years. Have two daughters, both in their 20s now, and they live away. They live in London, while Kathy and I live in Bristol. I am a Baptist minister, so I lead a church there. And what else would you like to know about me?
Well, I know that you've faced a number of challenges in life, but there's one particular challenge that you've faced for a long time and you continue to face today. So tell us what that challenge is, Mark.
So I'm registered blind. So and if people see me, they don't always recognize that unless I've got a white stick or bump into things and they realize that. But I've got a very limited amount of sight, like 1 or 2% of sight in good lighting. It's a deteriorating eye disease and I'm going towards blackness, which isn't that exciting. But it's a condition that I've had. It first manifested itself as night blindness. So when I was 8 or 9 years old, my siblings could run around and at night and with confidence, and I couldn't. And I couldn't quite work out why. But as I got older, it was called night blindness. And then in my 20s, they said, oh, no, night blindness is the first symptom. And the condition's much more serious. And so my sight has been deteriorating ever since.
So it was in your 20s that you learned that it was going to deteriorate to the point where you couldn't see anything.
That's right, yeah. Yeah.
So what was going through your head when the doctor gave you that, or the optician gave you that news?
Well, in some ways it was unawares, in some ways it wasn't, because the truth is I knew my sight had been getting worse. And so I drove and everything. I just couldn't see at night because of night blindness. And when they, so I had lost my driving license immediately because apparently seeing is helpful for driving.
I think it's a
nanny state and things like that. But anyway, so in some ways that was a relief. But then there's the practicalities of it's very frustrating not having that mobility. And I was trying to work out, well, how do we live? How do we do things? So it's one of those days where everything changed, but nothing changed. Because nothing changed, as I could see today as much as I could see yesterday. So the diagnosis didn't actually change that, but where things were going and our hopes and dreams. Because Kathy and I had only been married for about a year when we heard what the diagnosis was. So it sort of impacted all of our hopes and dreams and plans and with family and everything, really. So we added an extra dimension to all of our conversations and plans.
So when Naomi and Izzy kind of came on the scene, how many years married were you? And how has it been giving them age-appropriate communication of that facet of your family life? Because obviously it's a factor. You know, in my family, Beck, my wife, has got psoriatic arthritis, and sometimes it's fine and sometimes it's really not. And we've always had to communicate, right? No, like jumping off the sofa onto mummy like you would do with daddy is just not an option. Like, that's not an okay thing to do. So yeah, when they were born and as you know, as they've grown up, how has that communication looked for you in the family?
So Naomi arrived when I'd been registered blind for about 3 years, and then Izzy was about 5 years. But it's such a normal part of our lives. I don't think we have ever really specifically thought, how do I communicate that? Mm. I think that's just dad can see some things and he can't see some things. It's normal. Mm. So sometimes dad just misses things, and it's not because he's ignoring you. It's just because he hasn't seen you. And the kids just realize that that's just normal. So I think for many of us is we're thinking, oh, all the things you can't do, but the kids don't have this perception that you can do everything. And now, oh, you can't do everything. They just see what you can do. So I think many of us, we want to be the superhero. We have to build to do everything. And the truth is, I just can't do everything. But we fool ourselves because our kids aren't stupid. They know you can't do everything unless you're pretending. I want to be a super dad. I want to be the hero for my kids. And I've cultivated that. And my kids are in their 20s. And I'm still the superheroes. They'll roll their eyes on that one. But actually, they still have a lot of respect and a lot of value, and will chat. And because it's just about, it's not making a big thing out of something, which it is a big thing, but just don't make it a big thing. Make it a normal thing. I think that's probably what we did. This is just normal.
And I'm sure that would resonate with so many people either listening to this or watching it. As dads, we want to be a super dad. We want to be able to do all the things that will make life as easy as possible for our kids, to be able to, you know, protect them from harm, you know, safeguard their emotions, all those things. But for any of us as dads, there are limits to how much we can do that, because we're not superheroes. We do the best we can. And whether it be, you know, the challenges you face, Mark, or a myriad of other things that guys might be going through, whether it be financial strain or, you know, mental ill health or any other number of things that would make it harder to be that ever-present or powerful dad, like, it can't happen.
Absolutely. I think it's about focusing on what you can do. So even when I was diagnosed with blindness, is we could just list, I mean, and we can readily do the list of everything I can't do, but if you focus on that, that gets quite depressing and it's quite hard. But if you focus on what you can do, and I think even with the being a dad, it's saying, well, what can I do, and communicating that. And I think a lot of it is not fooling ourselves. Because I think we think, I have to be super dad. I have to be able to do everything. Mm. And then to admit that I can't do it is a failure. And you're going, no. Admit what you can do. Chat what you can do and celebrate those and have fun with those. And the bits you can't do, just say, nope, sorry, can't do that. Mummy needs to do that bit. And it's not making a big thing of it. And from really young age as well. So our kids from really young knew that some things dad didn't do, not because he didn't want to do it. It's just, you just can't do it. So, you know, there's no point asking him, because he's not going to help you find something because he can't see it.
And one thing you said earlier, Mark, was, and kind of ties into your story, was just how important it is to be honest with your kids.
Mm, yeah.
And I know that's kind of proved to be a helpful principle for you as a dad.
Yeah. Okay, we need to understand what honesty is. So they're not our therapist. So it's not actually, you know, unloading ourselves to them. But I think it's about being honest when you don't know something, or you're going, I'm finding it tough, or I just can't do that. Because sometimes the truth is, you know, a lot of us don't even like admitting we can't do things to adults, let alone our kids. And explaining, I've also always approached that I will over explain things a little bit if they want to know a question. When our Naomi, when she was always a why child, always asked why. So I'd always give the full answer. So like, you know, why do you need to work? So I talked about money and earning money and paying a mortgage. Well, what's a mortgage? So I think about six or seven, I explained what a mortgage is. And like, why is it raining? So I explained, and Kathy's rolling her eyes going, well, whatever. But
yeah, I've met Naomi. That does not surprise me.
Absolutely. I mean, she's got a master's in physics, so she's a clever kid. I mean,
she was seven.
Eight, nine. No, but I mean, in her A-level, she was losing me. But actually, it's always engaging with questions, and it's good to ask questions and always encouraging that.
That's a great principle, isn't it? It feels to me that we've been talking about something, a word that we often don't mention as dads, and that's vulnerability. And I think probably if we're being honest with our children, at some point in our lives, then as fathers, they'll become aware of our vulnerability. Now, I'm just interested, Mark, what do you think are the benefits to your children, to the girls, of becoming aware of your vulnerability?
I think one of the key things is they learn it's okay to say you can't do something, or it's okay to be vulnerable. I know, especially us blokes, we don't like to say that we can't do stuff. And I've learned from because my eyesight really is, if I don't ask for help, I'm going to get stuck very, very quickly. Mm. So I don't mind acknowledging that I'm weak and I can't do this. The truth is, no, I'm blind and I can't see it. Mm. So I'll ask for help. I'll ask for a lift, or I'll ask for things. I don't have a problem to ask. And that is vulnerability, but I don't see it as vulnerability. I see that as, well, can you help me? And so I guess it's reframing it a little bit. So I think it's okay to ask for help, and it's okay to say, oh, I can't help you, but maybe we can direct you somewhere else. It's to keep it in a conversation, really. So saying I know many people say that whole word of vulnerability is a tough one, but I think if we reframe it to say, you don't know everything, so sometimes I need a bit of help with that, is just being honest a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, and I guess if we don't show that to our children, when they get to a point in life where they need help, then they probably won't ask for help. Whereas if we actually show them that it's okay to ask for help, that it's actually, and what you're saying is, it's a strength to ask for help.
Oh, and they also see us when friends are around, and if we're going, we just need, you know, we're really stuck on this thing with finance or whatever, and our kids see us asking other adults for advice and help, they suddenly realize, oh, it's not a taboo, we can do that. So it's not just with our kids, it's they see in us that it's okay to ask for some help. And you learn that value, or you learn it's normal and it's okay to say, I don't know what to do here.
Yeah, and that almost feels like that is the polar opposite of what it is to be a super dad or a superhero. You know, you don't often see Captain America asking for help because it's not necessary. For any dads listening to this, you're thinking, well, I do want to be a superhero and I don't ask for help. What would you say to those dads?
It's interesting when you said, Stephen, about that you want to be the superhero and you also need to be honest. And what came to my head is, yeah, but when you put kryptonite near Superman, he needs help. Mm-hmm. And actually, it's to be honest. The truth is, you probably won't need help all the time or everywhere. And it's understanding it's not a base of one or the other. It's you can be both together. And just chill a wee bit with that is just saying you don't have to be super dad all the time and you don't have to be vulnerable all the time. Because some things we're pretty good at. And if you can do it really well, then go ahead, do it. That's fine. That's brilliant. Be super in the areas that you're super. Mm. And be honest in the areas where you just need to be honest that you're less super.
Why don't we segue into my quick fire questions? Mark Madovan, you've been prepped. You know these are coming. Every guest, I like to ask a series of quick fire questions just to try and get to know the psyche of the person in question.
Can I just clarify? He does know they're coming, but he doesn't know what the questions are.
I have no idea what you're going to say.
You don't know them, Mark. No.
They're not too random this time around.
good.
Okay, some of them are, but most of them aren't. Okay, so here we go. Quick fire. Don't overthink it. Beatles or Beach Boys?
Beach Boys.
Steak and chips or fish and chips?
Steak.
What would be the freakiest sound to hear at 3 a.m.? An ice cream van or a baby's laughter?
Baby's laughter.
Really would. Cocktail on the beach or hot chocolate in a snowy cabin?
Hot chocolate, because I don't drink.
There you go.
Yeah.
You can have a mocktail.
Nah.
Okay.
Coke Zero. I'll take a Coke Zero anytime. Yeah.
Okay.
Coke Zero or hot chocolate? Coke Zero.
Coke Zero on the beach or hot chocolate in a snowy cabin?
Coke Zero on the beach.
There we go.
I love it that you're reframing the questions.
Thank you.
That's exactly the right thing to do with Stephen's questions. Yeah, Don't answer them. Reframe them and answer the question you want.
He needs help, doesn't he? He needs help. He's not a super questioner. Yeah. He needs some help.
Yeah. Exactly. Would you rather fight an enraged goat or a placid panda?
Neither.
That's got to be one.
Placid panda, I guess.
Great. Who do you think the US president will be this time next year?
Depressing.
Would you rather wear only...
I love that you took that as the answer, isn't it? Because that is the answer, whichever way. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's my answer. Yeah, that's your answer. Would you rather only ever wear flip-flops for the rest of your life or cowboy boots?
Probably boots.
Okay. You're a church leader, so which biblical villain... If you had to have lunch with them, would you choose Goliath, Herod, or Judas?
Herod.
Okay. Great. That's the end of the quick fire questions. You don't need to explain any of them.
I wasn't going to.
I have to say, Mark, you cope with those questions brilliantly.
I don't think Steve did very well on that, but that's fine. That's fine.
Yeah, luckily I don't get scored on my questioning abilities.
Mark, just getting back to your story, I'm wondering for Naomi and Izzy, your blindness, has it enriched their lives in any way, do you think?
It's a really interesting question, because in some ways it sounds like a very insensitive question, as in, you know, so tell me the bright side of it. But actually, I know you're asking it actually deeper than that. You're saying, because it has impacted our relationship. It's interesting. A few years ago, Naomi was 15, so yeah, about 10 years ago, we were actually walking around Cardiff Bay. Kathy was off shopping with Naomi, with Isabel, and Naomi and I just did the Doctor Who when Doctor Who was good. And then we were walking around the bay, and we were walking arm in arm with my 15-year-old daughter, and she was saying, Dad, if you weren't blind, would you be a minister still? And we're chatting around that a little bit. And then I said, here's a question for you. I said, if I wasn't blind, do you think you'd be walking arm in arm with your dad at 15? And she went... Probably not. And so in what it's done is they are protective of me. They are they know I need guiding, so when we get a car, they'll always guide and help, and they look out for me, and they're very protective over me. They see me in high regard, but they also, so they know I can do a lot, but they also know that they need to protect their dear old dad in his old age. They do. So it's brought us closer, definitely.
What advice would you give to me as a father of two girls? Like, they're 4 and 2 now. Give me a snapshot of what to expect over the next 10 years, and what advice would you give to me?
It's a really good question, because a lot of people will say, if you think they're hard now, wait till they're teenagers. And I always say, no, don't do that at all. I think the teenage years were brilliant. I mean, they're challenging, but you've got to love them. And I don't mean just because it's your job, but enjoy the bits you can, love them. Always position yourself to be the, how do I help you? Keep the conversation, keep chatting with them. And it's also understanding that your girls are going to be, they're different people, and different things are going to connect with them in different ways. So with Naomi, as she grew up, I would always do story. We'd make up stories. So I'd say, give me 3 things, and then we'd make up a story. And we did that for years when she was younger, into her teens.
Love that.
Where Izzy was a bit different, and she would always, she wasn't quite as focused as that. So we would read a book together. We did the Mr. Men books together, and I had a different routine with her. It is to understand that they connect in different ways, and it's finding what connects with them, and then just leaning into that. So I always make their sandwiches in the morning when they're at school. And they had all these square lunchbox, so I would always cut a shape into their sandwiches. And Izzy was really loved it. So I would it got a bit hard at times because I'm going, I don't know. So I did the alphabet and all sorts of things. When Amy wasn't really bothered. So I didn't bother doing that with her. It's understanding what really just makes them feel special. Because Kathy never did that. It's I did it. That was just something that Dad does. And even now, so say they're older now, is they, when Izzy moved to London, she's not a city girl, but she's in London. And her first day of work, I say, morning, and praying for day one at work, and then praying for day two at work. And then at the end of the week, I went, how long do I need to keep doing this day? And she went, well, forever.
Right.
So this morning I sent her day 317 at work. So I don't do weekends and holidays and stuff, but yeah, today is our 317. And then Naomi wasn't really there, but Naomi started a new job in November. And so I texted her, stepping into a big new job. Mm. And I said, praying day one, day two. And by day four, Izzy always replies back, thanks, Dad, within minutes. Naomi never does. So I said to Naomi, I said, do you want me to keep doing this? And she said, oh yeah, it really encourages me. So I do her as well. So her it was day 36 today for her. And she will occasionally do a thumbs up, like once a week. But so she reads it and it encourages her, but she doesn't communicate that much. But they're just different things that it just touches them in different ways. So it's working out what do you bring? What can you bring? It doesn't need to be fancy. Something that's just a you and your daughter thing. And lean into that, and that's okay.
And, that's great advice.
And actually don't be pessimistic about, oh, when they're teens and stuff. And do you know what? I love teenagers because that's when their brains, they start having a brain and can argue back with you and ask more interesting questions. And it's just a different journey. But I think it's great. I love girls. I mean, I've had two daughters and I know how they work. Mine work, and I think it's brilliant.
And I love that encouragement about the teenage years because you do hear that a lot, don't you? Like, almost like the teenage years are a write-off. And I don't want to approach those years thinking it's only ever going to be difficult because I think it's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy. And so I like that kind of exhortation to actually, you know, those years can actually be a lot of fun. You have to, yes, there's different challenges, but yeah, when those years come, I still want us to be tight. I still want us to be close. Yeah.
But it starts now. It starts when, if you wait, if I think with all of the relationship stuff, if we wait until when they're teenagers and I'll try to find out what really connect with, the truth is that's may not happen. It's going to be really hard. But if you start doing it now, how do they wire up? And then you just build on and asking questions and being a bit more vulnerable is do it now when they're two and four. Mm. Seriously.
Yeah.
Because it's just, it then becomes normal to them because they've always known that their dad cannot see. I remember when they first went to secondary school, and so 11 or 12, and they were holding my hands. Now they go arm in arm. They don't hold hands, but with me, they arm in arm, but it's fine. And so they guide me by that way. But they're holding my hand at 12, and some of their friends just took the mickey out of them. They're saying, "Oh, you're holding your dad. You're still holding your dad's hand. You're a baby." And they just went, "No, he's blind. I'm actually guiding him." And that was true. So it was put down.
Blunt, but true. Yeah.
But it was true because they basically slapped the friends down. But I still knew. I mean, we went to body holding arms there because it's a little bit embarrassing. But actually, they're protective of me. And the truth is, they still want to be connected to their dad. Mm-hmm. They still want to show affection, even when all their friends around them are saying, "Oh, you don't do that. You don't do that."
Just thinking to the future, Mark. What do you think about the future? What are your hopes? What are your fears for the future?
So, I mean, it's a weird question for me because I know that my sight is I'm going to go to total blackout and that is scary. I don't know what that's going to mean about my job and just moving around and grandkids as well. When we eventually get grandkids, it is because I know what little kids, they run up and they want to be picked up and stuff. And I can't see that. And that's sad. And I don't know. We'll manage around it. We'll work around it. I know we will find a solution. So, I guess this dual thing is there is a sadness that I'm going to be losing out, but I also know the reality is, but we'll work something out. We'll work it out. We'll work it in a way that will connect. It won't be what I particularly want, but it will be what I can get. And so I'm, if I'm honest, I'm in dual minds with it. There's some really good things and some really tough things. And depending on which day you ask will be depend on which way I'm probably feeling, because it does change.
And that's a very realistic mindset, isn't it? And a lot of people listening out there will be the same. They'll be thinking about the future maybe with some fears, but with some hope as well.
Yeah.
And I love the way you say, you know, we'll cope with it, we'll deal with it, we'll manage when it happens almost. So
I think it's really inspirational, Mark, just that, you know, you haven't been dealt the easiest hand, but I think everyone's got their stuff, haven't they? And I think you can see things in the, you can look to the future and see things that you might think will be a challenge, but you can also look forward with, as Mark said, you know, a bit of hope, and to kind of, yeah, things haven't, aspects of your life and your journey as a dad haven't been like a lot of other dads, but you've lent into the things you can do well. And I think that's a really good kind of point to take, like the stuff that you can do well, and the stuff where you need help, ask for help. It's just a really good mantra.
I think it's a really important of breaking it down. Like I said, with the culture with your kids, is the truth, people say, you know, blindness, I don't know how I'd cope with blindness. And the answer is, well, neither do I. The truth is, I've done it day by day by day, and some days cope better than others.
Yeah.
And then with this unknown future, I don't know how you're going to cope with the future, but you just do it the same as you've done the past, is day by day by day. And doing it with people's help, you do it with honesty, I believe with God's help as well. And if some days you feel more optimistic than others, but it's breaking it down. And that actually is with being a dad, with lots of stuff. It's just break it into, what can you do? Let's break it into chunks and do it bit by bit by bit. Because let's be honest, that's how we got here today.
Mark, that's a great place to finish, because I love that principle of just taking life day by day by day. But before we finish, there's one more thing to do. Tell us your dad joke.
I don't like doing dad jokes, but I'll give one just for you. Just for you. Okay, so where is the best place to learn how to make a banana split?
I don't know. Where is the best place to learn how to make a banana split?
Well, Sunday school, of course.
That's really good.
That is very good.
Yeah.
That is wow, you got low standards.
No, honestly, it's just most of them are that bad. Imagine that one be slightly better written down.
You spell it differently, with an E instead of a Y.
But it's it's in the top.
It's a thinker. You got to work on it.
Exactly. Yeah. Well thought out. Well analyzed. I love the way we analyze the dad jokes.
They've got to be analyzed.
They need help, don't they?
Yeah. Mark, thank you so much for joining us in Dad Cave. You've been an absolute inspiration, and we've really enjoyed chatting to you.
My pleasure.
Thanks, Mark.
Well, that was fantastic, Stephen, wasn't it? And what happens with these podcasts for people listening is that we carry on talking after we finished recording, and we did that with Mark, and he said some incredible things after we'd stopped recording, didn't he, Stephen?
One thing Mark said, and I'll probably butcher the anecdote, but I'll do my best. He's obviously a Baptist minister, so he has his own personal faith. He was talking about how in his office there were these creaky stairs, and when people came to kind of like see him, there might be some sense of nervousness, and you hear these steps slowly creaking and as they kind of approach him. But he said whenever his girls were in the church office, they kind of like run up those creaky stairs, you know, kick him out of his office chair and just turn around on his swivel chair and just go around in circles and just have fun in his office. And he said how, like, for him, God the Father is more like that second. It's we can kind of come in, have fun, go on a swivel chair, and there's not the sense of like dread and nervousness. And I think that's a nice mental image, but I think it's also a helpful thing for us as dads to think we want our children to respect us, but we don't want them to be fearful of us, and to kind of have that playful, welcoming spirit is a really good thing to have as a dad. Because it's where the relationship and where the closeness and all that good stuff is kind of nurtured and grown.
And in a similar vein, he said, didn't he, about sort of, I suppose, not making the children fearful to ask questions, that there's no-go areas, that actually encourage them to ask questions. And that's made me think a lot, really, that, you know, sometimes we have these principles of, oh, no, we shouldn't talk about that. But perhaps sometimes we just need to ask, well, why not? why not talk about it? And actually, if the children know that they can ask questions and you will answer them as honestly as you possibly can, then it just makes for a more open, deeper relationship, I guess.
Have you seen Beauty and the Beast?
I've seen Beauty and the Beast a lot of times.
This is so random, but as you're speaking there, I was thinking of, there's a song where for some reason, Belle is starting to fall in love with this beast. She doesn't know that he was once a man and will be a man again, but all the same, take what you will from that. But there's a song where where at the end they're saying, I think there might be something there that wasn't there before. And Chip, this little cup, is like, what's there, Mama? And she's like, I'll tell you when you're older. And I've always thought, just tell him. Like, what's the problem here?
Yeah.
It's not like it's explicit. They're falling in love. Just be honest.
Yeah.
So you should be more like Mark Madovan and less like Mrs. Potts from Beauty and the Beast. So great. Mark was a great guest. And I think now there's nothing left to do but to tell our dad jokes. Are we there, Linz? Is this the appropriate time?
So who's going first, Stephen?
I'll go first.
Okay.
Okay. It's self-penned.
Uh-oh.
It's good. It's all right. So why wouldn't the frog agree to get married?
Why wouldn't the frog agree to get married?
Because he struggled with long-term commitment. Okay, light applause. I'll take
not
that.
Not bad. Actually, I think of all your made-up jokes, that is probably the best one I've heard.
Yeah.
Because it's the only one I've ever understood.
Yeah, okay, well, I'll take that. The last episode was dire, so onwards and upwards.
I also think this is the best dad joke I've ever told in the dad cave.
Okay, so, a lot of pressure. But
okay, here we go. What did the duck say when it bought chapstick?
I don't know. What did the duck say when he bought chapstick?
Put it on my bill.
Oh, that is good.
Hey, big applause. There we go. I knew it was a great joke.
Because it works on at least two levels.
Well, it doesn't really need analysis, does it?
Okay, fine.
No. Otherwise, we just spoil it, don't we?
Yeah, all right. Okay, so thanks, everyone, for listening. And we're now releasing these on the second Tuesday of every month. So do keep an eye out for those. And they're on the socials, you know, check them out. So thanks from me and...
And thanks from me. Bye for now.
The Dad Cave podcast was brought to you by Care for the Family. If you're a Care for the Family partner listening, thank you so much. The support we give wouldn't be possible without you. If you're listening to this and you're not a partner, but you'd like to join the thousands of people who are standing with us monthly, you can do that at cff.org.uk/donate. And as a thank you, we'll send you a pack of resources for you and your family. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.